Only in Dallas / Ocknard could this craziness, this frustration, this incompetence continue. The Cowboys once again will lead things off on this Wednesday edition of Writer Than You here on the Infinity Sports Network on the free Odyssey app on SiriusXM channel 375. It's Andrew Bogish in for Bill Ryder, who is off all of this week. He had hickey the last 2 days, me today and tomorrow, and we close as strongly as possible with Jody McDonald on Friday's edition. No matter who's here, you can reach us at 888-710-4ISN. That's 888-710-4476. At Andrew Bogish on Twitter. We are here with you for these next 2 hours with a lot of football to get to. It's a Wednesday, so there's a start bench cut. We are just about a week removed from the baseball trade deadline, so Steve Phillips will join us this morning. But Jerry Jones / Micah Parsons continue to force us to talk about the Cowboys, which may be exactly why all of this is going on with the Cowboys in Oxnard, California, at their training camp. Because I shouldn't be surprised anymore. I should not be taken aback. I should not raise an eyebrow. I should not wonder how is this possible when it comes to Jerry Jones and the Cowboys and contract negotiations, head coach searches, on the field, off the field. Nothing about them makes sense. Nothing about them is logical. Nothing about them is realistic. Nothing about them at times is modern, up to speed. And all of these things combined to be one of the reasons why the Cowboys have been far from the ultimate success in the sport for as long as they have. And the newest issue, the newest fight, is this staring contest with Micah Parsons. Unhappy linebacker, wants an extension, deserves an extension. He needs to be paid, but he's still not paid. You know the rundown. He shows up at training camp. He's watching practice. And then we start getting reports of how things are really deteriorating. There are handshake agreements. There's a cold shoulder for an agent. And then there's Micah Parsons saying on Friday in a two-pain Instagram post that he is done with the Cowboys. He wants to be traded. Fast forward to yesterday, still in Cali, a joint practice with the Rams, I believe, ahead of their first preseason game. And we have Jerry Jones talking about Micah Parsons. And Jerry Jones, once again, baffles me how he is able to say something like this.
Have you talked to him since the trade request?
I have not, no.
Has your people started any contract talks with his
excuse
agent?
Excuse me.
Has your negotiator started contract talks with his agent?
No.
How is that possible? This was on Tuesday, yesterday. The trade request came out Friday afternoon. And in fact, I was sitting getting my hair cut when I saw the news, and I was frantically texting Ryan Hickey because I had just done a Sports Minute about the reports that Micah Parsons was unhappy. And I was afraid that my minute no longer made sense since we now had confirmation that Micah was unhappy. That feels like 3 weeks ago. That was only Friday afternoon. That's what, 4 days to yesterday. And Jerry Jones, who, by the way, is the GM, he's the negotiator, and he hasn't said a word to Micah Parsons. I don't think he needs to pick up the phone right away within 30 seconds of Micah hitting post on the trade request. But like sometime later Friday, maybe that's time to just check in and be like, hey, man, like, all right, I get it. What's next? Let's talk. Let's do something. You send a text message. You can respond to the social media post. You can call him. You can walk to wherever he's staying in the hotel in Oxnard and knock on his hotel room door and have a conversation. There are many ways that they could have spoken at any point between Friday and Tuesday. And yet Jerry Jones stands up there and goes, no, I haven't spoken to him. So no urgency. Not a shred of desire to get this done. Or, by the way, to start working on a trade. Now, again, that to me remains the least likely outcome here of them actually having to divorce Micah Parsons and send him somewhere else for somebody else to pay him and for him to star on that defense. And the Cowboys certainly not getting back anything close to the corresponding value of a player like Micah Parsons. I don't think a trade actually happens, but you wasted 4 days getting to the end of all these scenarios. I just don't know how you don't have any tiny, there's literally standing at times feet apart on the field at training camp. Nobody can just mosey over and talk about this and at least say, hey man, Do you want to talk? When could we talk? Are you free for lunch on Wednesday? You don't need to negotiate in the sun during drills. Touch base. Check in. Try to figure this out because it needs to be solved. Unless Jerry knows and Micah knows that it's going to get solved and that this is just them basically wasting our time. Now, there are plenty of people who are plugged into the NFL, player side, team side, who have been saying since Friday that at least from the Micah Parsons perspective, like there are real hard feelings here. That's not, doesn't mean they can't figure things out. I mean, again, Myles Garrett did the same thing, posted a fancy Instagram, I want out of Cleveland. And then, but I think that's a pretty good example here. In less time than has transpired since Parsons trade demand, I'm pretty sure Myles had his deal done. Like him asking out was the impetus to get a deal done in Cleveland. Unless I'm misremembering that, that happened pretty quickly. I want out. Never mind. They're giving me all the money I want. There's a theory, despite the confirmation, well, at least the reporting, that there is a real divide now, personally, that there is some real beef here, some actual hurt feelings that need to be mended, massaged, smoothed out in some way between from Micah Parsons to the Cowboys. Putting those aside for a second, there's a theory here, and I've heard Bill Simmons mention this and some others, that Jerry's doing all of this, whether it has been Dak Prescott or wide receivers or anybody else that he has haggled over a contract with, a frontline Cowboy. CeeDee Lamb, Dak Prescott, and now Micah Parsons. And Dak got paid and CeeDee Lamb got paid, and the assumption is that Micah Parsons will eventually get paid by the Cowboys. That Jerry does this for the attention slash the distraction. He wants everyone else on the outside to just talk about the Cowboys. And the roster that he has built is not necessarily good enough to lead football conversations about who can win the East, about who can win the NFC, about who can win the Super Bowl. So the only thing that's left to get eyeballs and voices on his team is to create this kind of drama. And there's some logic here because he keeps doing this. He keeps picking fights with his best players, somewhat unnecessarily. And the thing that he keeps not avoiding, which is to his detriment, is he ends up paying these guys on the timeline that he's got to almost overpay. That he backs himself into a corner, and now he's that other deals have been signed, the market has changed, the number has changed, the request has changed. Now I got to pay X million dollars more to make him the highest paid this or the highest paid that. And when he could have gotten things done by being less whatever at a time where it was more beneficial to the Cowboys. I think that was true with Dak Prescott. It was true with CeeDee Lamb. And since this, you know, this Micah Parsons could have signed before TJ Watt, but he didn't. So there's a theory that Jerry's doing this, and he's just going to eventually write the check, but he's just doing this to get clicks, so to speak. And he's doing it to keep us off of nitpicking a roster that's not that great. In the NFC East, the Eagles are unquestionably better. The Commanders are better in my estimation, but whether they're better or not, they're getting a lot of attention, even before Terry McLaurin's issues, because of what they did last year. They're everybody's kind of darlings at the moment, coming through the spring into the summer. What are they going to do next? Another year for Jaden Daniels. So there's attention on the Eagles as the champs. There's attention on the Commanders as a team people like to maybe knock off those champs. And then there's the conversations about Caleb Williams and the Lions adjusting without both of their coordinators. And there's always some attention on the Niners, and there's attention on the Rams, and we'll mention Matthew Stafford this morning. So without Micah Parsons' contract fight, or without Dak, without CeeDee Lamb, without anybody, we're probably not talking that much about the Cowboys. So Jerry goes, you know what I'm going to do here? I'm just not going to sign Micah Parsons. So there is some logic, and there are some dots that connect through that theory. But to me, this is still just about general incompetence. This is still just about Jerry Jones is the biggest hurdle to success for Jerry Jones. We know all he wants to do is win again. For reputation, for resume, and much like Bob Kraft in New England, both men know how old they are, and they know that the chances to win again are limited. So there's pressure to win as soon as possible. And Jerry just can't get out of his own way. I mean, he knows how to play the PR game, so I got to give him some leeway there. But this is just about him being bad at GMing and making bad decisions and rash decisions and maybe with personal feelings and not business acumen, not listening to those around him. Because none of this is good for his team. It's just not. And this is the reason before, but roster construction also factors into this. Almost all of these problems tie back to Jerry being in charge. Hickey, I think you had somebody on Monday who said the Cowboys long are overdue to hire someone that doesn't have Jones as their last name that works between ownership and the players. Whether you call him a GM or whatever, like there needs to be somebody in between. And there's not. And there hasn't been. And there's not going to be. And it's a delicate thing to work around here, but as long as Jerry is fully operational as Jerry in Dallas, they're just not going to win. They're just not. They pick the wrong players. They sign the wrong players. The players that they're lucky to have, they anger them, and you can't possibly believe that the rest of the league is not looking at this and going, you know what? I don't want that. I'm not signing up for that. I'm not signing up for mediocre football and a weird head coaching search that lands on Brian Schottenheimer out of nowhere. And then I'm not signing up to eventually have this old guy fighting with me through the media. It's not good now, and it's not good big picture. And it all goes back to Jerry, which sucks for Cowboys fans. But if you're the Eagles, if you're the Commanders, maybe one day this will matter to Giants fans, anybody else that's good in the NFC, you don't necessarily need to worry about the Cowboys while Jerry is still running the team fully as he is now, because he's going to find a way to mess it up. Maybe a year from now, it's not about a contract. It'll be something else. It is a never-ending circle of doom for this organization because the owner can't help himself, can't get out of his own way. And I shouldn't be surprised by anything that happens and any choices that they make. But when he said this yesterday, that they hadn't talked to Micah Parsons, and they're still not talking to anybody who is contractually obligated to represent Micah Parsons, they haven't spoke since the trade demand. How do you not just stick out a hand and go, let's have a conversation after your best player posts a two-pronged statement ripping you and asking out? How do you not try to mend that fence or figure out immediately that it's not mendable? And you do have to find a way to divorce here. Why are you just wasting time? But it's the Cowboys, and it's Jerry, and that's the only answer. Applying logic or previous examples, how other teams handle this, it doesn't matter because nobody else is Jerry, which for a while at the beginning of all of this was a very good thing. But now it is a heavily negative thing. And there's just no escaping it for this organization and their fans. Speaking of good situations, how about those Cleveland Browns? Currently 5 quarterbacks on their roster right now. They've got their first preseason game coming up. We are going to get an extended look at Shedeur Sanders. We also have the Bengals making a much debated and long overdue decision with their preseason snap count. We've got that. We've got baseball with Steve Phillips next hour. We've got start, bench, and cut on a Wednesday. We've got buy or sell. And we'll close the show with two or three bits of craziness around sports. Different degrees of seriousness, different degrees of how much this actually matters. But we've got the WNBA, we've got the NFL, and we've got the NBA. living in odd worlds at the moment. So that's a lot to do between now and 12 Eastern. Happy you're here with us. It's Bogish in for Bill Ryder. And Ryder Than You is back in just a second on Infinity Sports Network.
You're listening to the Ryder Than You podcast. You're listening to Ryder Than You.
I'm a big vanilla guy. People, you know, will put down vanilla. It's boring. It's bland. Vanilla is is my favorite ice. Well, not my favorite, but it's better than chocolate ice cream. Straight up, head to head, vanilla over chocolate.
Oh, come on!
Yeah, it's vanilla is delicious.
It's the expression is literally it's so vanilla.
Yeah, and that's a bad expression.
On the Infinity Sports Network.
I hear no lies. I stand by everything I stumbled through saying in that clip. I am confused, though. Who's that third voice? I know me. I know Bill. And then there's a random guy that didn't sound like Hickey yelling in the background. But yeah, vanilla's delicious. In fact, I had a vanilla milkshake over the weekend, and it was glorious. Now, the splash of Jack Daniels I threw on top and mixed in might have helped. But vanilla is awesome. No thanks on chocolate ice cream. Like, straight chocolate ice cream? Nope. Hickey's confused here, too.
Chocolate's very good, but also I'd agree. I don't think vanilla gets the love, especially vanilla bean. It should.
Right. Vanilla vanilla has a flavor. It's not eating air. It's not eating nothing. There is a vanilla flavor. And I don't know the science behind this. I don't know how real this is, but there is a way to measure flavor, like measuring like the heat in a pepper, like that Scoville unit. There's a way to measure, and I've heard from other vanilla defenders that whatever this metric is, vanilla has more of it than chocolate. So eat it, chocolate lovers. Vanilla wins.
Is there like a vanilla convention every year?
There should be. Get me on Radio Row for that, boy.
Make the case.
It's Andrew Bogish in for Bill Ryder, Ryder Than You, on this Wednesday. Phone lines, as always, are open at 888-710-4ISN, 888-710-4476. Thanks, as always, for hanging out with us for these 2 hours. We are inching towards, we had the Hall of Fame game last Thursday night. I assume, like me, most of you really couldn't care less. Yay, football's back, but generally speaking, no thank you. We've got a full slate of games now starting Thursday night. We get our first real look at players in new teams, draft picks, storylines, and maybe the storyline from the spring through the summer is Shedeur Sanders and Dillon Gabriel from the draft, added to Kenny Pickett and Joe Flacco, four quarterbacks in Cleveland. And then we throw Snoop Huntley on this week because two or three of those guys have been banged up recently, which leads us to a Friday preseason game for the Browns and the confirmation yesterday that Shedeur Sanders is going to start in Carolina on Friday. I didn't see how long they expect him to play, but the only other quarterback that's going to be in a jersey and a helmet and pads on Friday is Snoop Huntley, who only has officially been a Brown since yesterday. So is Shedeur going to get two series and then go run and hide, and Snoop takes a beating for 3.5 quarters? Or does Shedeur play for a good chunk and then Huntley plays whatever is left over, maybe the back half of the second quarter and then the whole second half? I didn't see Kevin Stefanski lay that out. I do know this, that Kevin Stefanski said this morning that two of their top wide receivers, including Jerry Jeudy, are not going to play in this game. So Shedeur Sanders is going out there on Friday for some amount of time without two of their better wide receivers, and I'm sure other guys here and there, far from their number one offense surrounding him, skill position players and blockers. That's how he goes out there on Friday. And I know there's a lot of different thoughts about what exactly Cleveland is doing here and what this means moving forward for Shedeur and this quarterback battle. But to me, the decision to start Shedeur Sanders on Friday means absolutely nothing. Zero, zilch, nothing about any value judgment on him at the moment or going forward. Now, he maybe can change that by the way he performs in game action with a less than full complement of first teamers around him. But he's starting on Friday because nobody else can start on Friday. Because Kenny Pickett's out with a hamstring injury. Dillon Gabriel's not fully healthy. And they're protecting Joe Flacco because, like most of us, they assume, even by default maybe, that Flacco is going to be their week one starter. So they're not putting him out there on Friday night. So Shedeur is only left to get this start. It's not a compliment. They didn't choose him over the other three guys. They chose him because he's the only guy that was there on Saturday, because Snoop Huntley just got there Monday/Tuesday. He's their only option. He's not the option. He didn't erase the other options. He was the only other guy to put out there. So sitting here today, I don't think you can read anything into this decision by Kevin Stefanski. It changes nothing about how they're progressing towards week one. Again, he maybe can earn some more whatever by the way he plays. If he handles the huddle, if he handles the pressure, if he makes the right reads, if he puts points on the board, maybe he gets in a two-minute drill. Like, he, on the field, he has a chance, obviously far better than practice and joint workouts and whatever, to turn some heads, to gain some confidence, to maybe force more reps in practice when all four guys are healthy. But him starting Friday means nothing. There's no conspiracy theories about them throwing him out there to look bad, to alleviate the situation. This is not because he deserves to start. It's just because he can start. And the other three guys, for different reasons, can't. So, Shador, here you go, bud. Do the best with it, but you're our only option right now. So, congratulations. This will remain, you know, only this feels like a Jerry Jones move, if I'm being honest, going back to segment one. Like, where did this come from? We even had the owner in the last, 2 weeks basically go, this was on the GM. I share some of your confusion. Please leave me out of this conversation. And Jimmy Haslam deserves no sympathy, no forgiveness, no nothing, for a lot of other different reasons. But I kind of wanted to give him a long distance, like, pat on the back for taking himself out of this equation, because I don't know why the Browns put themselves in this situation. I don't know what clicked in someone's head as we got into round four and round five, and they said, you know what we need, guys? On top of Deshaun Watson and living in a Joe Flacco, Kenny Pickett world, having just picked Dylan Gabriel, you know what we should do? Coming off Myles Garrett drama and being in a really tough division and people already mad at us because of Deshaun Watson's contract and whatnot, and nobody likes our owner. You know what we need? We need a good dose of Shador / Deion Sanders. And now we get here, and in this day and age, to spare you all the details, it's not smart to have four quarterbacks on your roster, on your 53-man roster. Because to have all four means that's one less guy that plays a regular another position that you can have out there, whether that's a swing tackle, another wide receiver, extra defensive back, whatever it may be, that's a spot that should go to somebody who plays snaps. Because you have 53, and then a handful of guys don't get jerseys on Sunday. So having a fourth quarterback has never made sense. And I don't know that anybody did it long-term since the rules changed over the last couple of years. And the problem is putting anybody on the practice squad leaves them open to somebody else plucking them off. So you can't hide one of these guys on the practice squad, because there's a chance that then you lose them. So they've got to protect them all, and to keep them safely in Cleveland, they all need to be on the 53-man roster. I know that Andrew Berry has said more than once, if they all warrant a spot, we can keep all four. I don't believe him when he says that. I don't believe him when he says that. I think part of him is, air quotes, hoping that maybe an injury alleviates some of this logjam. Maybe he knows that one of them is going to look, and most of the rookies that, you know, are going to look bad enough that they have to do something with them on that roster spot. Maybe he's trying to convince people, hey, if you want one of these guys, you've got to give me an offer here that I like, because I'll keep all four if I have to. It's all about leverage and whatever. I don't believe him, though, that he wants to get to week one where all four of those guys are actually on his roster, because it does create a little bit of a headache for the coaching staff to lose a usable roster spot on a fourth quarterback. Whether it's Gabriel or Shador, they each make the other unnecessary. It's redundant. It was a terrible decision. Just a terrible decision to take both of them. Once they took Dylan Gabriel, they should have crumpled up their quarterback board and walked away from that position in that draft. Or they should have not taken him, because he may pan out becoming nothing in the NFL, and just sat and waited, and if they got Shador, they got Shador. Or they could have found somebody to be the third guy behind Pickett and Flacco that would have created none of this drama. But they're the Browns, and that's where we are. Before we go any further, Hickey, I want to address the elephant in the room before the last 90 minutes of this show. So Bill's off all this week, which, and once he's out, it leads to a lot of moving chairs. Sometimes you sit in here, sometimes you stay there, and somebody else comes into this chair. Now, when you come in here like you were the last 2 days, that usually brings Nico Scarlatos into the building. And for those who are not privy to Nico's entrance, it's a doozy. And Nico, if you've never seen him, Nico looks, and I don't say this meanly, but he looks like he's 17 years old. I'm scrawny, he's scrawnier, but he walks into this place with his sunglasses on most days, under some kind of cool hat. Usually, maybe there's a jersey. Yesterday he had a Keith Hernandez jersey on, but he walks in. He might make a little extra noise under a big glass door outside our studio so we can see that he's here. And then he walks in, sunglasses on. Everyone's happy to see him. So my question is, Hickey, as you settle into this new job, do you feel any heat from Nico being kind of like the, he's almost like the backup quarterback where everybody in town loves him? Are you worried at all about the lure of Nico Scarlatos these days?
Oh, very.
Okay.
Like you said, he's a cool guy, sunglasses on, rock star vibe.
Right.
Everyone loves him.
Nico! And he's walking around holding court. He's got hot takes on everything.
Kissing babies, shaking hands.
Yeah.
It's very concerning. He does no wrong. He can't mess up. I can only do wrong in this job. And so it's like every arrow is pointing towards me, and there's the golden child. It's every day is pressureful.
That is true. Now, it's hard for me to listen post Pretty Daddy to this show, but when I do catch the occasional episode where you're not here, but Bill is, and Bill's working with Nico, he has pointed out the differences, the pluses and minuses between you and Nico. Bill notices.
I'm not going to ask you your favorite because I'm afraid of the answer.
I don't have favorites. I'm just saying that the allure of Nico reaches Bill's studio as well.
Across the country. That's some powerful, as the kids say these days, aura.
Yeah, aura. Is Riz still a thing? I don't know.
It's bringing back, keep it going. Swag.
Why not?
It's
yeah. Whatever the word is, Nico has it. More than me, more than you, more than Gordon Damer. But Nico's not coming from my job, so I can kind of enjoy it. I just want you to be careful here, Hickey. I know how hard you worked to get here, and I wouldn't want this pesky Long Island 20-something kid to come wandering in and steal it away from you.
You know, I did compliment him the last 2 days. I thought he did a great buy or sell.
Yeah,
I wouldn't revoke that. I wish I knew that beforehand.
I wouldn't. Now, you don't want to be a bad guy, and you don't want to be dismissive. I would just play it straight down the middle. No compliments, no negatives, just Nico, here's buy or sell. Thanks, Nico, and then go back into your own thing. I wouldn't. He doesn't need any more glossing from you. He's getting it from everybody else.
Should I go though, Aaron Rodgers, I think, and just try to knock him down?
I'm not a
take
mentor.
Shots? Yeah. I'm not here to babysit. You know, I'm not gonna, you know, help this guy, show him the ropes.
Yeah. Yeah, he could be your Michael Penix to your Kirk Cousins.
Yeah, Kirk's a nice guy for the most part. He's just not going to go the extra mile to help him out.
Exactly.
Maybe I'll build a trap door, and if he falls in it, well, sorry.
Or never get sick or take vacation days.
Also true. I've already canceled him next week.
Or do the Pretty Daddy trick and only take off when Bill's not here. So there's no Bill has no experience with the other guys.
Now that's a good idea.
Yeah.
So he has no idea.
That's a pro move. So Bill only knows working with D-Cell.
We'll say, why Pip is now just echoing in my head. If only he never took that day off.
Yeah, I didn't mean, I thought as friends that you needed to know that the Nico experience is fun.
The threat level is real, huh?
Yeah, whatever DEFCON, I never remember if DEFCON goes up or down.
I never remember that either.
I think it goes down. I think DEFCON 1 is where you don't want to be.
Yes, I think even though 5 sounds like it's right. Really bad, I think 5 is like the least.
We might be at 5 right now.
No,
I don't know.
We're not at 5.
We're not at any DEFCON? You think we're worse than 5?
I don't think we're ever at 5. I don't think we're ever at 1. I know we've never been at 1. Okay. I don't think we're ever at 5.
Interesting. Is there a way to check what DEFCON we're at right now?
I'll take a look.
What warrants a DEFCON?
Oh, a lot of things. Nico. Nico walking in immediately goes from a 5 to a 4 at the very least. So yeah, just be careful. Just tread lightly, watch your step, and don't be too nice to Nico because I think he's a little bit of a sneaky assassin.
I appreciate it. That's a real friend right there. Yeah. Thank you. When I feel the knife in my back, I know it's not from you.
Exactly. 888-710-4ISN, 888-710-4476. We've still got to get to the Cincinnati Bengals. We'll do that. Their decision to play their starters for a change in the preseason. Maybe we'll sneak that into buy or sell. That's next hour. Steve Phillips is next hour. The WNBA's adult toy problem is still a problem. That's next hour. Smelling salts, very popular in the NFL. That's on the table next hour as well. But first things first, let's get an update from Mr. DEFCON himself, Gordon Damer.
Infinity Sports Network. Sports Flash.
And we're at DEFCON 3 right now, so not even 4. Yeah, this Sports Flash is sponsored by Progressive Commercial Insurance, protecting your business vehicles 24-7. See if you can save at ProgressiveCommercial.com. The Browns set for their preseason opener on Friday. Head coach Kevin Stefanski making it official this morning with Shedeur Sanders.
We'll rest some starters. Some players will play. Obviously holding out some guys due to injury, as you know. And then we'll play Shedeur at quarterback. We just signed Snoop Huntley, as you guys saw. We'll see. Get Snoop back up to speed quickly.
Yeah, no Joe Flacco, Kenny Pickett, or Dylan Gabriel because of injury. And as for Sanders, won't have Jerry Jeudy or Cedric Tillman either. There's still that Micah Parsons contract dispute with the Cowboys. Jerry Jones, not confident his star will be ready for week one.
No, absolutely not. Big part of that is his decision. How would I know that?
Meanwhile, Panthers quarterback J.C. Horn involved in a car accident today. He's been given the day off practice. I'm Gordon Damer.
You're listening to the Writer Than You podcast. Welcome back to Writer Than You.
One of the main reasons why I love the way you put your format together is you throw out some various topics and you let it kind of marinate, and it's wonderful. It's what I think good sports talk radio should be.
On the Infinity Sports Network.
Was that to Nico? That caller? That compliment? Andrew Bogus in for Bill Ryder. Bill, a much-deserved week off. He is back, I believe, on Monday. Hickey did a great job the last 2 days. It's me today and tomorrow. Jody Mack, the legendary Jody Mack, is in the seat on Friday. And again, no matter who is here, the phone number is the same at 888-710-4476 at Andrew Bogus on Twitter. If you want to be nice to us or yell at us or whatever, that's how you can reach us on this Wednesday morning. It's a little more than an hour of show left. Hour number two, busy as always. Steve Phillips, a man who once took a job from me at Sirius XM Radio, will join us to start hour number two. Start bench cut in just a second. Buy or sell next hour. The WNBA's adult toy problem, the NFL's smelling salts problem, and the Miami Heat's security problem, all coming up before we are done. Before start bench cut, let's sneak in a phone call at 888-710-4ISN and say good morning to Chris in Lexington. Chris, my thumb works. You're on the air, buddy. What's going on, dude?
Good morning, Andrew. Hey, buddy, I just want to take you back a couple years, man. When I first heard your voice, I was always a big fan of John Feinstein. When I first downloaded the sports app, you were doing updates on his show, and now listening to Maggie and Pearl, I get to hear you again, and I've never heard you in this chair, so I like what I hear so far, so I just want to tell you that.
Chris, I appreciate that. I'm also thankful for you being a listener for so long. I mean, the Feinstein show was years one and two of this network. It's a long time ago.
Yeah, and I was yeah, it's not why I called Andrew, but I was sad when that show got taken off. I thought you and John did an awesome job, so but what I wanted to call about, and Ryan knows this because I call Bill's show a lot. I'm a Pittsburgh native, born and raised, Andrew. And so I wanted to touch on what you opened up with about Shedeur and kind of compare it to, you know, the clownish, you know, jokes that we've been getting in Pittsburgh with the way we handled our quarterback situation. But I want to compare it to this. Okay, we clearly did not have a first-round grade on anyone from Jackson Dart all the way through. Okay, and yes, we kind of put some feelers out for Darnold, and you know, played around possibly trade with Stafford. When those two didn't, you know, pan out, I read this from our GM many times. We have, it's right around 12 picks, Andrew, in the first five rounds next year, and he has said point blank, we're getting off this quarterback carousel once and for all next year. So to bring in Mason, solid number two, I'm not going to confuse him with a franchise quarterback. I don't mind what we did, because to me, and I've said this to Bill before, it's a high risk, low risk, high reward type season. You know, it's a 1 year thing with Aaron. We load up. Who cares? Because, you know, we will have the draft capital to go up and get what we did. But what Cleveland did to bring in, you know, when I was watching the draft and I saw Dillon in the third round, and then you bring in Shador, you know, my thing is, if I was a Cleveland fan, because you know you're not going to the playoffs, Andrew, if you run out Joe Flacco for 13, 14 games, what have you really learned? And for the future, you know, if you don't give Dillon and Shador, you know, give them a chance to put some tape down to see, okay, maybe you might have something, then why did you even bring them in to begin with? Yeah. You know, because you're going to be picking in the top five again. You know what I mean?
Yeah, Chris, can I say something nice before you go? At the very least, as frustrated as you might be with the Steelers QB situation, at least you ended up with the best quarterback on either of the rosters. I know Aaron Rodgers has some issues, but he's better than Flacco and Pickett and Gabriel and Shador. So at least you got that.
Yes. Thank you, Andrew.
All right, Chris, thanks again for calling and for all the nice words. We appreciate that. It's never going to make sense other than, you know, to have as many options as possible, I guess. But, and, you know, I had my hesitations on Shador Sanders going through the draft process. I thought he was always overvalued, overhyped. And I was definitely, I don't know how you're not at least partially concerned about the Deion factor. I mean, I just don't trust Deion to actually stay out of this in the NFL. He's going to say something about a coach or the system or whatever if Shador gets out there and doesn't play well. Like, it's going to happen. I can't imagine that it doesn't. But all of this baggage, you know, to the fifth round, a fall, in retrospect, that's a long fall. But him falling in general does make sense when you throw in the fact that he's not a completely unquestioned top five prospect. He maybe is a career backup, and backups don't get to bring baggage like Deion Sanders as their dad and all of the everything else that goes around Shador Sanders. Some of it is his fault. Most of it is not. But you don't, when you're going to be a backup, you don't get to have that. So it's not necessarily surprising that he didn't go on day one or two, but waiting in the fifth round, that was a significant fall that obviously nobody saw coming. And now you fast forward to here, and they're in this spot where the easiest out would have been for Flacco and Pickett to play and look good this summer and have somebody need a quarterback and want one of them. Or I guess have one of them take themselves out of the equation altogether through an injury. And while Pickett's hurt now, it's not a long-term thing. So they're going to have a decision to make with these four guys. And it's not an enviable decision. It's not an easy decision. And I don't agree that they just have to play. The last thing that coaches have in their power these days is playing time. You have to earn it. You have to warrant it. And guys don't just get to play for the sake of playing to see what they can do. So we may not see them on the field at all this year, which is par for the course for third and fifth round picks. Should we do start, bench, cut here? We've got time. We've got time. Start, bench, cut. It's a Wednesday. Here we go. I'm Ryder Than You.
It's Start, Bench, Cut on Ryder Than You.
Bogues, let's pick up where the last conversation left off. Start, bench, cut. These quarterbacks you are most excited to watch in the preseason this weekend. Shador Sanders, J.J. McCarthy, Cam Ward.
So I'm going to cut Shador right away, just to go back to what I said a few minutes ago, that him starting Friday, it doesn't matter because of the current health situation around the Brown quarterback. There's no value judgment in this whatsoever from where I sit. So Shador playing, to me, is not a big deal Friday. I'm going to bench Cam Ward just because he's the number one pick and is going to be the starter in Tennessee. I want to see that a series or two. The one to start here is J.J. McCarthy because he is a significant person in the entire NFC conversation. If he's good with that defense and some of those skill players, then they might not win 14 games again this year, but that puts the Vikings right back in the conversation among the NFC's elite. So let's start J.J. McCarthy, let's bench Cam Ward, and we'll cut Shador.
How about this? Start, bench, cut. These quarterback battles you're most intrigued by this summer. Browns, Colts, Saints.
And so begins a theme here in Start, Bench, Cut of Hickey sneaking in somewhat personal questions because his Colts are involved in this one as well. This is a tough one because I don't know what the complimentary answer is here. The only thing that I'm good with is cutting the Saints because I just, who cares? I mean, Spencer Rattler got the last 2 days of first team reps. That was big news because nobody had doubled up this entire summer, but move pass. So let's start the Browns just because we need an answer and it involves Shadur. We'll bench the Colts because picking between Daniel Jones and Anthony Richardson Sr. is definitely a choice that most teams don't want to have, and then we'll cut the Saints.
Let's go here. This was interesting. So former Tennessee head coach Derek Dooley announced recently he is running for a U.S. Senate seat in the state of Georgia. Start, bench, cut. These professions you want to see former head coaches pursue. TV analyst, politician, or youth sports coach?
So I was watching the Little League like World Series semifinals, so to speak, the other day, and somebody coaching a team used to be a college baseball coach, and now he's coaching basically what's a 12U travel team. And that made me laugh because that's a pretty significant drop in like skill set and maturity and what you can ask them to do. So I'm going to start that. Like, let's move a guy down a couple of rungs and see how he handles like the lower level and parents and crappy umpires and bad fields. Let's bench TV analysts because that's what they normally do. And let's cut politicians because I can't think of an athlete or a coach that has gone into politics on either side of the aisle and actually been useful.
Let's go to baseball. Start, bench, cut. The worst ways to lose a baseball game.
Here's another hickey question. These are all these all apply to our Mets.
But it's also generic. This applies to every baseball fan. Would you rather lose when your team is not hit, when they're starting pitching gets shelled, or they have an implosive bullpen?
So this is all plaguing the Mets right now. Yes, this is why it's a Mets question. We've also left out a Penn State question. So we're getting two of the three hickey questions here at a start, bench, cut. I'm going to start with imploding bullpen because that to me is the one that gets fixed the least. I'm going to bench starting pitching because I think I can figure that out. And then we'll cut bats not hitting because to me, at some point, you go back to being a good hitter. So that one is the least of my concern. We'll get that one out of there. So there we go. Start, bench, cut. Truncated on a Wednesday. Hour number two, it begins with Steve Phillips. More baseball with the former Mets GM. He is now the co-host of the Leadoff Spot at MLB Network Radio. You see him on MLB Network as well, at Steve Phillips GM on social media, a former colleague of mine as well. So a mini reunion with Steve in a few minutes. Then it is buy or sell, of course. And then we'll close things out with three of the wackier stories in recent memory and sports all bundled into one for you. So as always, it's a busy hour too. Stick with us, Writer Than You, on the Infinity Sports Network.
You're listening to the Writer Than You podcast.
Bill Ryder is all of those things. He's also not here today. Andrew Bogish in for Bill on this Wednesday edition of Writer Than You on the Infinity Sports Network, on the Odyssey app, on Sirius XM, channel 375. As always, thanks so much for being with us. And as promised, a week after the baseball trade deadline, we'll recap the teams that made moves, didn't make moves, have been hot since last Thursday, or going in the opposite direction over the last week. We'll do all of that with my good buddy, the former GM of the New York Mets. And I'll remind you once again, in that time, he did not trade Scott Kazmir for Victor Zambrano. That was a different gentleman. You can hear Steve Phillips now every morning on the Leadoff Spot on MLB Network Radio. See him on MLB Network TV, and you hear him right now here with us. Steve, it's been way too long, man. How are you?
I'm doing great, Andrew. Good to be with you.
Yeah, thank you again for making time. I know how busy you are. So we've had a week to kind of digest the deadline and see which teams took their GM's help and ran with it, maybe some others that went in the other direction. But actually, I wanted to start with a team that really didn't make a huge deadline move in the Milwaukee Brewers. They won again last night. They apparently just now had the best 60-game stretch in their history. They've got the best record in the game. But from where you sit, and I don't ask this dismissively, this is just to figure it out, how actually good is this Brewer team when we get to October?
Yeah, they're very good. And, you know, they're a team. You know, Pat Murphy, their manager, talks a lot about, you know, the no-name team and nobody knows who we are and a bunch of average Joes. But the reality is they're a bunch of above-average Joes that they never put a below-average player on the field. And so they've got a lot of moving parts. And they may not have, you know, MVP candidates, but they've got a lot of above-average players. And so they give themselves a chance to win every day, because no matter who's in the lineup, they're better than most, you know, average players. And plus, you know, for the short series, in the postseason, they've got a big three in the rotation with Freddie Peralta and Brandon Woodruff back off the injured list and pitching, and Jacob Mizrowski, the youngster. He's on the IL right now with a bruised shin, but, man, he's throwing 102 miles per hour. And then they've got a really good bullpen. They always do. But Abner Uribe leading into to Trevor McGill, they've got, you know, quality stuff, and they can steal bases. They're the third best base running team, taking extra bases. They've got some power. They come through in the clutch. They're a really good defensive team. And so, yeah, all the things that you need to win, including making contact at the plate, are things that they do very well.
How do they fit in, Steve, into the bigger conversation about the health and the economics of the game when we're, you know, looking at the possibility of work stoppages and CBA fights and salary caps? Do the Brewers, the way they go about their business, prove that we don't need to stop the Dodgers and the Mets and the Yankees from spending a lot of money?
Yeah, 100%. Like, I understand that small market owners would prefer a salary cap, which would include them getting a lot of revenue sharing so that we could level the playing field and everybody spend the same amount of money. And the way to do that would be to take the revenues from the larger markets, give it to the smaller markets, and everybody spend the same amount of money and socialize the game. But I also understand, if I bought a large market team, I'm like, wait a minute. When I paid $2.6 billion for the Mets, I did it with the intention and understanding that I was getting a large market team and all of the benefits that come with it. I paid a premium for it. But it was a business choice for me to do it. The notion that I'm going to do it now and devalue my franchise to try to raise everybody else, I don't know why large market general managers would agree to it. And I know the players aren't going to agree to it. And so, you know, I look at it and think, you've got the Tampa Bay Rays, who always seem to compete. We've got the Cleveland Guardians, who are right back into the mix right now, fighting for the American League wild card. You've got Milwaukee competing. We've got middle market teams that are out there battling. And so, you know, I look at it and think that there's this notion that we need to fix a problem. I don't know that we really have a problem. Of course, I get the Dodgers are there every year with a chance to be a playoff team, and the Yankees are almost there every year to do it. Some of the teams that spend money, they've got a better chance on a more frequent basis to do it. But those well-run teams, regardless of the size of the market, always have a chance to compete. And so I think the owners need to figure out on their side how they want to balance it out, but the players aren't ever going to agree to do it for them.
Steve, you've been in these front offices, you've been in these conversations. How actually unlevel is the playing field when it comes to money? I mean, I work from the assumption that the guys in Kansas City, Pittsburgh, Miami, they're choosing not to spend money as opposed to not having money to spend. Is that the right generalization to make?
Not really. Okay. I think that you know, the idea with revenue sharing was that it was supposed to level the playing field, that when I gave, you know, when I shared some of my revenue, because we have it already with large market teams, sharing it with small market teams, and those recipients, you know, the idea was that they would spend it on, you know, player payroll, but there's no obligation to do it. It's contractually not an obligation to do it. I don't think they could in the labor agreement without the union agreeing. And so, you know, we have teams now that aren't really, you know, doing that. Some are pocketing some of that money. Some are saying, well, I'm investing into my infrastructure and in scouting and development and that sort of thing. And they are, but maybe not all of it. And so, you know, there isn't a complete accountability for those teams now that are getting the money. So in Pittsburgh, they don't really spend that money. The Athletics haven't been spending that money. And that's why you saw them this winter, though, because there's a potential grievance from the players that they weren't spending enough, you know, to a certain threshold, which was contractually obligated, that they started spending more, right? Severino got the contract. They traded for Springs. They gave Brent Rooker an extension. And so, you know, you see them starting to adjust a little bit, but, you know, there can't be a floor in a negotiation where you say, okay, we're not going to negotiate a cap, but we're going to negotiate a floor and say at least teams have to spend this much. Because in labor negotiations, if you negotiate a floor, it automatically comes with a ceiling.
Yeah.
And therefore, that's why there's never been that sort of a minimum amount that teams have to spend.
This is Steve Phillips with us here on Writer Than You on the Infinity Sports Network. You can hear Steve on MLB Network Radio, see him on MLB Network TV, follow him at Steve Phillips GM on social media. Let's get back on the field, Steve. The Padres, unlike the Brewers, were very busy before Thursday. They always are. They get O'Hearn and Laureano from the Orioles. They make the huge Mason Miller trade. Where do the Padres fit at the top of the NL in your mind?
Yeah, I think they've made enough moves that they've given themselves a chance to catch the Dodgers. I think they're 3 games behind, and I think they've got a shot to catch them. I think the Dodgers will probably hold them off because they now are getting healthy. They've got Blake Snell back, Glass now back. Kershaw's throwing well. Yamamoto's throwing well. They're going to get Sasaki. He's working his way back. And so I think that, you know, their bullpen's getting healthy. But the Padres have the best bullpen in baseball by far. They've allowed Mike Schilt, their manager, to shorten the game. If you have a lead, if the Padres have a lead by the fourth inning, they've got a chance to just bring in arm after arm and just manhandle you. And in the postseason, where last year we had more than 50% of the innings thrown by relievers and rather than starters, it does set up well for the Padres in the postseason. Now, they must prefer to get a bye and to win the division. And, you know, the one thing that's interesting about them is they're ranked like 28th in home runs this year, the Padres. Even with Machado and Tatis, they don't hit a lot of home runs. Now, Laureano came in. He homered yesterday. O'Hearn's got some power. You know, there's 15, 16, 17 home run guys, which, you know, will help. But they've got to find different ways to score. And, you know, with some speed, with some manufacturing, by putting the ball in play. We saw them get it done yesterday. But, you know, their starting pitching is a little bit of a question. But they also have such a good bullpen. And good bullpens don't just hold the lead. They also hold the deficit and allow you to come back in games. And that's where I think the Padres have a pathway to win a lot of games in different ways.
Steve, you mentioned the Dodgers a second ago. If you were in that front office, what would your idea, what would your plan, your suggestion be for Ohtani, the pitcher?
Yeah, I'd make him just a hitter.
Forever, or for right now?
Yeah, forever. Because the contract still works if he's just a hitter.
Yeah.
And I think it's important he can play the outfield. He's got enough athleticism, certainly, to do that. But, you know, go back to just before his second Tommy John surgery a couple years ago, the Angels had him. They decided they weren't going to trade him at the deadline. They were going to hold him. And then he went out in Detroit and threw in a doubleheader through the first game, threw a shutout, and then he came back in the second game, hit two homers, and then he started cramping up. And from that point forward, his body was giving out on him, I think making a statement that it was rejecting being a two-way player. He started getting cramps in his hands, in his side, in his hamstrings. And then the next thing you know, he breaks down, needs Tommy John surgery. So he's worked his way back, and he really wants to pitch. But his last time out, he's got cramping in his hip. And I think that it's amazing what he can do, and nobody's like him. And I don't think we'll ever see anybody like him. But I just don't think his body at this stage is going to accept being a two-way player. I think it's too much wear and tear. And, you know, too much on his bottom half, and then, you know, which leads to him mechanically getting out of sync and then blowing out his elbow. Remember, he was the most protected pitcher in baseball, and he had two Tommy Johns since then, pitching once a week, you know, protecting the innings, protecting the number of pitches, and he had two Tommy John surgeries. So I personally would make him a hitter because his offense has gone down ever since he started pitching this year. And I would just let him go out there and rake, swing of the bat.
Yeah, and that's the thing I can't talk away, because like everybody else, I'm fascinated. I want to see him hit and pitch for forever and be elite at both of them. But the numbers are the numbers, and his numbers are noticeably different at the plate when he's pitching regularly. And it doesn't. That's, to me, not a trade I want to make, and I don't have an argument against that. That's, to me, is almost the way to say he shouldn't pitch anymore.
Right. Now, they're going to pitch him because he wants to pitch, and they want to accommodate that. And so I think they've got a balance stretching him out to get some length where he went, you know, in the fourth inning, he cramped up the last time. He's scheduled to pitch today. And I would suspect they'll try to get him through 5 innings and keep building him up a little bit. But I think they've got to be really aware of, you know, his communication is good, but he really wants to still be the unicorn. And they've got to guard against, you know, him trying to push through when he shouldn't and just try to make sure they keep healthy, because what they don't want to do is lose his bat as well.
Yeah, Steve, do we know exactly how adamant he is about pitching?
Oh, he 100% all in.
Like it's a non-starter. Like they don't even broach the subject with him. It's that significant.
Right. No, non-starter. And you know, and here's the thing. Like Dave Roberts, you know, throughout has said, well, you know, I'm not exactly sure which day he's going to throw. You know, it'll be, you know, maybe it'll be one inning or two innings the next time he throws. And it's because Ohtani's the one sort of guiding that in making those decisions, that it's not really Dave Roberts doing it. And this is just the era that we're in. And when you have a unique player like this, you know, that player has a lot of power and, you know, is the one who kind of says how he's feeling to control things. And that's where, you know, Dave Roberts sort of has to concede giving up that control to let Ohtani do it. And so it's going to be interesting to see, you know, what, if he does get through the season as a pitcher, do they use him in the postseason? Does he supplant Kershaw and Snell and Glasnow and those guys? Because, you know, he's been a great pitcher when he's pitched Ohtani. Got a sub-3 ERA. He's got great stuff. But, you know, it feels to me like every pitcher is just a risk that something could go wrong. And I don't want there to be cramping that takes him out of my lineup, because more than anything, I want his bat out there.
Steve Phillips, MLB Network Radio, with us here this morning on Writer Than You. Steve, the Red Sox won again last night. That's, what, 7 in a row? Do we owe Craig Breslow an apology after being very critical of his deadline moves?
No, he didn't make great deadline moves. But, you know, it's seemingly unaffecting his team. And I had a chance to visit with Alex Cora this morning on MLB Network Radio. And, you know, they're really excited about how they're playing. They're young guys. It's almost like the young players don't know any better. They don't know that they're not supposed to be thriving like this. They don't, you know, they don't have any fear. They just go out and play. And, you know, with, you know, he's got Dustin May pitching tonight for the first time in a Red Sox uniform. But, you know, Crochet is an ace. Giolito has really gotten back on track. Brian Bale's gotten on track. And, you know, these young players are sort of the bat. Trevor Story has sort of reclaimed his career and over the 78 winning streak, he's hitting 488 and tearing it up. And so, you know, I think that, you know, I wish they would have done more at the deadline. I think they should have done more at the deadline. They still have a chance to make the playoffs, but the question is, if they get there, can they win a World Series without having fortified the bullpen a little bit more and maybe adding another starter?
Steve, this is a great chat. It's, like I said, it's been way too long. It's great to hear your voice. Happy for all your success, and hopefully I'll actually see you in person soon.
Terrific, Andrew. Thanks, buddy, and all the best to you as well.
Thanks, Steve. Steve Phillips, former Mets GM, hear him on MLB Network Radio. He's on MLB Network TV as well. One of the coolest guys I've worked with. That was back at Sirius before coming here to this network when it was called CBS Sports Radio. And as a Met fan, even though I had some individual gripes with Steve about moves that were made or not made, it was very cool to get to know him. Man, that was like 15 years ago. And I said this in passing last hour, Hickey, but the only time I've ever in my career really been like demoted, wasn't fired, thought I was getting fired, wasn't getting fired, was just getting kind of demoted, was I used to be part of a morning show, and it was like there was one main host and then three of us who were kind of always in the studio, always on the air as the full crew of the show. And Sirius had a chance to hire Steve Phillips, and they jumped at it, and it made sense. He's Steve Phillips. You know, he was at that time kind of coming back from all of his off-field stuff, but he still carried a lot of name value, and he's very good on radio and TV. So they hired Steve Phillips to become the co-host of that show with the guy who was the main host at the moment. So I got Friday show ended. I got called into an office. I was told what was going on, and then I was just going to be the update guy again, like walk in and walk out. Still part of the show, but it was things were changing. So I was bummed. And Steve called me later that afternoon. He's like, and you know, we had never met, and nobody knew this was happening. So like 3 hours after all of this news started, he called to be like, I know this is a weird, tough spot, but like, I'm excited to be part of the show. I'm excited to work with you and the other guys. And, you know, and was like, no hard feelings. I'm like, Steve, you're no hard feelings. You're not doing anything. Like, I got a Met thing or two we have hard feelings over, but this is nothing. But that, but what a gentleman, right? And a professional call. And he called all of us to introduce himself and to, like, say how much he was excited to be part of the group. So I'm a big Steve Phillips fan. Again, for non-baseball reasons. The baseball stuff. Although, you know, he was there for some good teams.
Traded for Mike Piazza, right?
Yeah, that worked.
Worked out. That worked out well. 31's up in the rafters.
And he said yes to coming on today. So he continues to be one of my favorites. We thank Steve for jumping on. Buy or sell, as usual, is next. Writer Than You on the Infinity Sports Network.
You're listening to the Writer Than You podcast. Welcome back to Writer Than You.
The first time I met Reed Forgrave, a buddy of mine, he told me his SAT score. What's wrong with people?
On the Infinity Sports Network.
Hickey, you remember your SAT score?
I don't.
I don't.
For a reason.
Okay. Moving on. And I feel like nowadays, do those almost not even matter anymore? Didn't schools like stop caring about standardized testing?
I was just going to ask, is SAT still even a thing?
I think it does still exist. I think it's back to the way I assume that you took it. Definitely the way I took it, where it's just two parts and it's 1,600 points or whatever. But remember, there were essays, and then it wasn't at a 1,600 for a while. They made a lot of different changes, and I think it's now back to kind of the way it started. But I think a lot of places stopped caring about one particular test score.
Once COVID came, obviously, and you couldn't take the SATs, that was obviously right, the big reason why they're now test optional.
Yeah.
I still had three parts, though. I mean, I took it back. I'm trying to think.
You had the essay part?
2010, 2011, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Still, like, I mean, most people, like, when you say the score...
You're just younger than I.
You give two, you know, scores, either out of 16 or out of 24.
Yeah.
But I'm pretty sure it was still when I took at least a three-parter.
Oh, yeah. No, I took mine in, I guess that would have been 1997, and it was just 800 math, 800 verbal, and that was it.
Jealous.
Yeah, no writing. No, I mean, no writing.
It's pretty good.
Yeah, thank God.
Those tests were so, like, 5 hours, too.
Well, and then, like, it became, you didn't study for the test. You went to a place that told you how to do well on the test.
Right.
Which I think is part of the argument against them, is that if I just am being told how to be good at the test, not really telling you that I'm smart or not.
Exactly right. I took SAT prep classes. Yeah, it's like a different, it's like, you're, yeah, it's a different.
Princeton Review, I think, is the that was the one, right? You want to do buy or sell?
Let's do it.
All right.
What side will Bill take on the biggest issues in the world of sports? It's time for today's edition of Buy or Sell on Writer Than You.
All right, folks, let's start with a little football. Let's start off the field, then get to on the field. Yesterday, it was announced that ESPN has purchased the NFL Network and other media assets from the NFL. The NFL Red Zone channel now will still be owned and operated by the league, but the four-letter network will reportedly broadcast Red Zone on TV as well. What that looks like yet, we do not know. Buy or sell. This acquisition for you is exciting.
I'll buy this.
Buy.
Because I'm excited that I'll eventually find out that I can somehow pay less money for all of these things. That may not end up being true, so I reserve the right to change my answer here. But I already pay for ESPN Plus. So if all of a sudden now, like, Red Zone's involved in that, then that might change the economics of all of these different subscriptions that I pay. I mean, it's a lot between me and the kids and my wife and, like, the things I need for here to be able to watch. So if maybe things start getting bundled and the price is a little different, I'll be excited. But otherwise, I was already watching them separately. It's not helpful that they're just going to be in the same place. This is about money for me, Hickey.
I hope you're right. I kind of lean the other way. I think this deal
probably
is made to make more money.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully not, but we will see. NFL Network's Ian Rappaport reported this morning that Rams quarterback Matthew Stafford has been diagnosed with an aggravated disc in his back.
Say that slowly.
Disc. And has received an epidural to help deal with it. Now, Stafford has yet to practice during training camp because of this injury, although the Rams are still confident he will be able to suit up week 1. Buy or sell. You are concerned about Matthew Stafford's back injury.
My answer to this would have been different 24 hours ago. This morning, it's a buy.
Buy.
Now that we've put a label on it, we know it's something. I would have sold this yesterday, because yesterday I thought this was more along the lines of what I remember, like, Michael Strahan doing with the Giants, being like, I'm old, I know what I'm doing. no new coach. Like, I'm just going to not, I don't want to do two-a-days. I don't want to be out in the sun. I don't want to sleep in a dorm room. I'll see you guys like when training camp part of this is over. I thought that's where we were with Stafford. It was just like, I don't need to do this. I'm good. You're good. I'll come back when we're like really in regular season mode. But if we're going to give this a name and say that he had an epidural, and we also know that he's not been fully healthy for most of the last couple of years. Yes, more. I'm more concerned, though, about him getting hurt where he can't play during the season as opposed to, like, oh, he's missing practice time now. I'm more concerned that this becomes a bigger issue, not just about, like, rust at the moment.
So you started the show by talking about Cowboys owner Jerry Jones, and yesterday met the media and said that he has yet to speak with Micah Parsons or his agent after Micah Parsons on Friday requested a trade away from the team. Well, Jerry also said when asked about whether he thinks Micah Parsons will suit up week number one, well, here's the answer.
Any confidence that he will be on the field against Philadelphia?
Again, no. Absolutely not. A big part of that is his decision. How would I know that? I'm just saying. No, but I'm urgent.
So buy or sell, you believe Micah Parsons will miss week one if he does not get a new deal?
Oh, I'm going to sell this.
Sell.
Missing an actual game is a big deal. It doesn't happen a lot. And while I do believe that Micah Parsons is legitimately bothered and insulted by all of this, he has been at camp to avoid a $50,000 daily fine. At the moment, I don't believe that he wants to miss an entire game check. So I think he will be out there. And I also think he'll have a contract by then. But I think even if he doesn't, he'll be out there.
Who'll be out there, not for week one, but for this week in preseason week number one, are the Bengals starters. After years of starting the season slow, they have vowed this offseason to make a change. That change, according to head coach Zach Taylor's about to hear, includes starters playing in the preseason this week.
Now we've got guys that are ready to go. We want to give these guys those snaps. So we're excited to get them started against Philly. They'll play against Philly. We got a game against Washington. They'll play a little more against Washington. And so the guys have embraced that. I'm excited to watch them go compete.
Buy or sell, playing in the preseason will help get the Bengals off to a better start than previous years.
I'm going to sell this.
Sell.
Because I still think the problem is just personnel. I still think that I don't know if they're better on defense. Does anybody? We don't know that. And we don't know if Trey Hendrickson will be on the field for them as well, or if he is, what kind of shape and form he is in for them. And I think that's the bigger thing. But they had no choice but to do this the way they have started the last three or four seasons. They had to change something up. They had to, at the very least, Hickey, like, remove an excuse, remove one thing to blame for these bad starts. So they had to do this. But I don't think this is the biggest problem. The problem is the guys they have on the roster and on the coaching staff not being good enough to balance out that ridiculously good offense.
Speaking of not being good enough, that is the question right now surrounding Vikings quarterback J.J. McCarthy and whether he can live up to the hype that he had coming out of Michigan. Now, he will be the starter this year. He will start in preseason game number one for Minnesota, but he will not have for game number one of the regular season. One of his big-time wide receivers in Jordan Addison. That's because yesterday the NFL announced Addison has been suspended three games stemming back to a 2024 DUI arrest. Now, couple this with the fact that Justin Jefferson was not suspended, but has missed most of training camp so far with a hamstring injury. Buy or sell, this will negatively impact J.J. McCarthy's development.
I'm going to buy it.
Buy.
Can you name, after Justin Jefferson and Jordan Addison, can you name me any other Minnesota Viking wide receiver?
I know KJ Osborne used to be there.
Yeah, so did Randy Moss.
Wow, I don't think I can.
Yeah, that's the problem. Now, TJ Hockenson's a tight end. He gets more targets and can do more and can be more productive without Jordan Addison. But the wide receivers after Addison and Jefferson are Lucky Jackson, Ty Felton, Tim Jones, Deshaun Jones, Thayer Thomas, and Dante Fleming. So just sheer numbers, Jordan Addison missing three games is a big deal. And J.J. McCarthy needs as much help as he can get. Now, they might run the football a ton. Again, when Last year, Jefferson was hurt, and Hockenson got more targets and produced off of them, so he's still there for this. But taking Addison out of the mix is significant, and it's just an extra hurdle that J.J. McCarthy does not need to clear as he tries to prove that he should be QB1 for them.
If I set the number, over under number, at a half, buy or sell, you've heard and or recognized any of those names you just read off.
I mean, sell.
Sell.
And I only was aware, I only remembered Ty Felton as I asked you the question because I was reading this morning about how the Vikings will live without Jordan Addison. And the point was, we got Jefferson, we've got Hockenson, and then these guys. And I remembered Felton's name from the mix as not even Lucky Jackson. How did I forget Lucky Jackson?
But Felton Mellon guy.
What are they? What are they doing out there? Give me a third known wide receiver.
Wow. Good luck to J.J. McCarthy the first few games. That is for sure. Holy smokes. You also need luck, Bogush. Yankees, well, I can't even call him close anymore. Yankees reliever, Devin Williams.
I think he's fine as is. But that's just me.
As the man who has struggled all year long was not in the closing role yesterday, but instead came in the eighth inning and allowed a 2-run single that proved to be the difference as the Rangers beat the Yankees 2-0. Williams for the season has now allowed 26 earned runs, which is the same amount he's given up in the previous 3 years combined, Bogues. His 5.44 ERA is almost three times as high as his career 1.83 ERA he had with the Brewers. Buy or sell, Devin Williams is broken beyond repair.
I'm going to buy this.
Buy.
For this season. I don't think this is fixable now. I don't think it's fixable as a Yankee. He can leave after this year, right? I mean, they can't keep him. He's got to go. Yankee fans that I know are, on top of the actual just pitching part of it, they don't like the way he answers questions after games. I think they would like a little more heartbreak from him. And a little more acceptance that it's going bad. The other day he said, I made one bad pitch, which became a home run. And that didn't sit well with Yankee fans. It seems like he's just not cut out for here. And this, I know it's, you know, cocky New Yorker of me, but this is a different place. Philly's a different place. Chicago's a different place. Devin Williams came from the Brewers. And when he was a Brewer, you know, enjoying some level of obscurity nationally, he was amazing and had one of the most famous singular pitches, his weird changeup, the airbender, in the entire sport. And then Pete Alonso takes him deep at the worst possible time for the Brewers last October, and he's come here and he's been in and out of the closer role and he's been an abject failure. So he can be fixed. There's still a good pitcher in there, but the Yankees are not getting it out of him.
Let's finish with this. The PGA Tour FedEx Cup playoffs start this week in Memphis, Tennessee, with the State Dude Championship. 69 of the top 70 players in the world will be in attendance, except for one notable omission. That is Rory McIlroy, who has accumulated so many points that he's automatically qualified for the second leg of the playoffs. So he is skipping this tournament for essentially load management. Buy or sell. You have a problem with Rory McIlroy skipping the first leg of the playoffs.
Yeah, I'll buy this.
Buy.
I'm not necessarily mad or disappointed at Rory, and this will be the extent of the energy exerted on this topic. I'm not going to think about it again after your question, Icky, but something's clearly not right if you can go, I'm going to skip round one of the playoffs because no matter what, I'm making round two. It's not good by you, the individual, and clearly the system has a flaw. If you can punt on a round and or a tournament and still get to the next weekend, that makes no sense. And this weird heel turn about face from Rory, and a lot of it is warranted because he put himself out there as the anti-Liv guy. I mean, he was the voice of the PGA attacking those guys. And then the PGA did him dirty, and he's like, you know what? Guys, I'm out. And now he wants no part of anything. Reporters, responsibility, attention. He's been pouty, all these different things. And now he goes, you know what, guys? I'll see you in round two because I'm good to not even play this weekend. It's crazy. You know what? In retrospect, this is pretty badass. Maybe I like this the more I talk it out loud.
If I asked you, do you think he'll still be playing golf by the year 2030? What would you say to that?
That's 5 years from now?
5 years from now. So he's still on playing regularly on the PGA Tour?
I don't have his age at the top of my head, but I think that's in probably the beginning of the time where he may decide to go. It's not
disinterested.
Yeah, and like everybody thought when he finally won this year that he was gonna like that it was gonna be bringing this new lighthearted, happy-go-lucky Rory, and it's gone the complete opposite. Now he's like this cranky old man.
He's 36, by the way, so he'll be like, in this time, we're talking 40, 41, which for golf terms is still relatively pretty young.
Yeah, I would go with, generally speaking, that's like the beginning of the end of Rory playing regularly. I still think he'll play the next few years like normal. But that's in play for him for sure. He's not a guy that's going to play for forever and like then go shift to like the senior tour. Like there's a time where he's just out. Done. See you later. Is that it, Hickey?
That is it.
Nicely done. Better than Nico, for sure.
Let's go. That's what we're talking about.
We've got three bonkers stories still to get to, all rolled into one segment. We'll get to that after your update. Here's Gordon Damer.
Infinity Sports Network. Sports Flash.
Andrew, from the moment he walked away at the age of 32, some fans have not given up hope that he would unretire. Well, now Aaron Donald giving some of those fans a sliver of hope on Instagram. Donald posted a photo of Cowboys pass rusher Micah Parsons in a Rams uniform and commented that he might be forced to get back into playing shape if that were to happen. Parsons has already requested a trade due to his unhappiness with his contract and nothing new there with Jerry Jones. Says he's not spoken with Parsons or his agent recently. Rams do have two first-round picks in the 2026 draft. No practice for Panthers cornerback J.C. Horn today. Involved in a minor car accident on his way to practice. Avoided any serious injury, but will sit out as a precaution. Browns head coach Kevin Stefanski made it official this morning. Shedeur Sanders will get the start at QB Friday. Browns open up their preseason against the Panthers. Cleveland so banged up at QB. The team signed Snoop Huntley today, and he will see some snaps on Friday. And the Phillies set to face the Orioles, first pitch in about an hour. Phil's announcing that they have pushed Zach Wheeler's next start back from Friday to Sunday. He's got shoulder stiffness. I'm Gordon Damer.
You're listening to the Writer Than You podcast.
Welcome back to Writer Than You on this Wednesday. Andrew Bogish in for Bill as this entire week off. Back with you again tomorrow, same time and place, 10 a.m. Eastern on the Infinity Sports Network. The Odyssey app, Sirius XM, channel 375. Huge thanks to Steve Phillips for joining us earlier this hour to talk baseball. Tomorrow, Evan Washburn of CBS will be on the show as we inch towards the NFL regular season. So if I don't say so myself, I mean, Hickey, handsome guy. I don't think I'm that ugly, but we're up in the ante with Evan Washburn walking in here tomorrow. I mean, have your hair done, iron your shirt, let's go.
Hottest sports radio show, people are saying, in even history.
I mean, we deserve to not be just on radio tomorrow if Evan's going to be on the show.
Great hair he's got. Great hair.
Great hair. Somebody else, not him. There's a different sports guy that does have a hair commercial. And I'm blanking on the guy's name. It's the one, though.
Not Shams? He's got great hair, too.
Not Shams. It's somebody else who's selling me a product that makes your hair grow like thicker. So it's a little like it's a half like my hair's thinning, balding kind of thing. This is going to bother me all day. I'll figure it out before we get to Evan tomorrow. For now, though, I've been teasing this all morning. There are three wacky stories floating around sports. One on their own would be great. Three together is almost too much. Let's start with the WNBA. Over the last week or so, we have now had 3 to 5 incidents where a neon green adult toy shaped like a particular part of male anatomy. And it looks, what's odd to me is the three that have reached the court. I say 3 to 5 because 3 have reached the court. The first one last week in Atlanta, then Friday in Chicago. The poor Golden State Valkyries were on the floor for both of those road games. And then yesterday it happened in L.A., the Fever and the Sparks, with social media posts that things were thrown in New York and Chicago. I'm sorry, Phoenix last night as well. But whatever was thrown didn't get onto the court, so it wasn't on TV, didn't stop the game, didn't put anybody in danger. So we've seen 3 maybe there's been five, and apparently they're all the same neon green color, as if they're somehow connected. Now, when the first one happened, it was mostly, air quotes, funny. Even the players involved were like, it's not safe, stop doing it, but oh my God, did you see it? And then the video of the players, the referee, fans, like realizing what it was and getting away from it or kicking it in disgust. Like, there's some humor. Didn't seem like a big deal. Then it happened again Friday, and you're like, hmm. And then last night, it happened at least one more time, maybe three more times. And now, enough's enough. I still think that this is just one idiot, and the person in Atlanta, the ringleader, so to speak, like, there's a person already in custody or charged with multiple misdemeanors for doing this, a guy named Delbert Carver. It's all alleged for the moment. Now, my assumption remains that he did it for whatever reason, allegedly did it for whatever reason, and then other people decided to do it as well to, like, also get a laugh or whatever. There is the possibility that there is something kind of, like, sexist, misogynistic going on here, throwing that piece of fake anatomy on a court populated by women. I still think that's like overthinking it, going too far here. But now that it's happened three, four, five times, and maybe more have been purchased to bring into games to keep doing it, maybe there is something a little more significant going on. But I'm still deferring to one idiot and then a handful of copycats since then. But like, the WNBA is in this weird spot where, because this is a problem. Like, it's, first of all, it's not funny, it's not clever. And there is a real danger in throwing anything on the court. You could hit somebody, somebody could get hurt through all of this. So we shouldn't throw anything. It's why even still now it drives me nuts. When you buy like a bottle of drink, they take the cap away from you. So you can't put the cap back on it and make the bottle easier to throw farther. Because throwing thing, it's stupid, it's dangerous, it needs to stop. But like, the wild card here is what's being thrown, and it makes any serious conversation hard to have because everyone's tiptoeing around, what do I call it? How do I describe it? Like, so it just, like, enough's enough. Like, we get it. It was never funny. It's definitely not funny now. Can we please stop throwing these particular things on the court but not throw anything? I do, though, want to know how they're getting through security. That, to me, still is the one question. Is how people are sneaking these things into the arenas. Because there's got to be some creativity involved. It's not just sitting in your clear backpack, and when the person looks in with the, like, the wooden little poker thing that they have, they're not just missing it. So it's got to be hidden somewhere. I do kind of want to know how it's getting inside the building to be thrown. But let's just get this off the plate, off the agenda altogether. So that's one weird story. In the NFL, I didn't know how much players cared about smelling salts until George Kittle basically barged his way onto NFL Network yesterday.
I honestly just came up here to air a grievance.
Oh.
Our team got a memo today that smelling salts and ammonia packets were made illegal in the NFL.
Wow.
And I've been distraught all day.
Okay. Illegal?
He even said he's not practicing anymore.
I considered retirement.
Yeah. So they got to go ahead and bring that back for George Kittle.
We got to figure out a middle ground here, guys. Somebody help me out. Somebody come up with a good idea.
Before every drive is a smelling salt?
I'm an every drive guy.
In between every play,
That's way too much.
Well, it feels like the energy's still out here, though.
Definitely, yeah. But I miss those already.
So, have you ever done smelling salts, Hickey, ever?
No, never.
Me neither. I was dumbfounded this year to hear a Little League coach say that he gives his kids them almost every morning to wake them up before school, like, to get them fired up for the day. I don't know if they're good or bad, and this is what the NFL's argument was, is there's no real defining proof that this smelling salt ammonia package are helpful for being more alert, more awake. And the bigger argument is they apparently could mask symptoms of a head injury. But I didn't know that anyone cared that much. And I'm not kidding when I say that George Kittle crashed an interview. NFL Network was talking to somebody else. And he just walked in and grabbed the microphone and was like, here we go, guys. Now, the good news, I guess, for Kittle is the actual memo yesterday said teams cannot supply players with these things. They didn't say players couldn't use them because that would require a bargaining session with the NFLPA. That's a CBA issue. All the league said is that teams can't give them. So George Kittle can still use them. I guess he just got to bring his own from home, and he'll be good enough to go with his smelling salts. The last thing very quickly is a crazy, this is my favorite crazy one of all of these three. A dude has been allegedly quietly stealing millions of dollars of memorabilia from the Miami Heat. He worked for them and then NBA security, and the team was keeping all the game-worn stuff to possibly make a Heat Hall of Fame. And I guess this guy every once in a while would just like put a LeBron game-used jersey in his bag and walk out. All the things, over 400 game-used items, roughly $2 million in merch taken over multiple years, and he only was arrested the other day by the FBI. How about that? Dude just pilfering stuff. And the Heat had no idea for like 18 months. It was almost a perfect crime. Almost a perfect crime. We gotta go. Thanks to Steve Phillips. Thanks to you. Thanks to Hickey. Thanks to Bill for letting me be him. I'm Bogus. Have a great Wednesday.